Welcome back to the American Classroom Podcast. In part two of our conversation on innovation and education, we dive even deeper with Dr. Vernon Smith, a trailblazer in educational innovation. Today, he challenges traditional ideas about affordability, accessibility, and quality in higher education, offering bold solutions that redefine what's possible for students of all backgrounds. From integrating cutting-edge AI tools to creating transformative programs for foster youth, Jared Taylor and Dr. Smith share inspiring stories of success and practical strategies for educators and institutions alike. We also discuss the vital role of human connection in education, even in an increasingly tech-driven world. Stay tuned as Lindsay Lundeen Crosland, Jared Taylor, and Dr. Smith explore how intentionality, ethics, and creativity are shaping the future of learning. Let's jump in.
You know, the biggest criticism of higher education right now is and it's been going on, although it's not true, but is it worth it? Is the juice worth the squeeze for getting a higher education? And, you know, the Fed has actually done studies on this and show that, you know, a high school degree will get you this much. A college degree will have $1 million on average earning power after, you know, of obtaining that. But there's so many areas out there saying, well, is it worth it? Well, part of that is the sticker price, where the sticker price is, although it's backed off in the last couple of years, not outpacing inflation because inflation has been so high, frankly. The question is, how can I afford? And students get sticker shock, and it is so expensive. Even in-state, you know, in residence, it's very expensive, and that's hard on the pocketbook. The things that you can do that are a lower cost but higher quality, and, you know, lower cost, higher quality, and accessible, that you have a pathway to do that. That really is something that I've always looked for. Sometimes we call it the iron triangle, right? You know, choose two. You can have high quality and high cost, or high accessibility and high cost, or you know, but you can't have all three. But I don't believe that. I believe that through creative thinking and innovation and technologies, you can do that.
I also think families and communities really need to look at, because I got the MBA here, and I think of total economic value, because it's like the old Harvard professor or president said, right? If you think college is expensive, try living without it. It's like what you lose when you choose. And so we tell a lot of our families, we say, listen, yeah, you're going to be paying the tuition, but it's this much cheaper. So we talk about how it's definitely accessible and affordable, their scholarships. But the real magic is if you get out a year or two earlier, right, then you're avoiding about $30,000 to $40,000 to $50,000 of student loans. You're pulling in your earning power, you know, 50, 60, whatever your first year salary is, 1 or 2 years. For some families, for many families, it's between $100,000 and $200,000 of real economic value that they're pulling into their future, their children's future with this program, which is costing you roughly $5,000 to $7,000. And it doesn't take a math major to figure out that number works really well.
Especially in states where they're actually totally funding it, which is, you know, interesting. I think Arizona has a really good model because there's skin in the game for the student. You know, if I were a board member of a K-12 system, one of the questions I would ask is, I would sincerely ask, what is our dual enrollment strategy? Because, you know, over the years, they've packaged and sold AP, advanced placement, which is like, I'm putting quotes here in the air, like college credit, but it's not college credit. My kids, where they went to school in Virginia here, they had an international baccalaureate degree, which, you know, has some cachet with different institutions, but it's not college credit. They did have a few dual enrollment courses through the University of West Virginia. I mean, Virginia, but University of West, and Laurel Ridge Community College, which is local. And guess what was the biggest payoff?
The DE.
The college credit. It's not college. So one of the questions, if I were a policy, I mean, I would, at a state level, I would say, what is our dual enrollment strategy as a state, understanding the cost savings and, as you said, the total value of what that is? And at the board level, I would be asking, you know, what is our dual enrollment strategy? And then I would try to you know, there's a lot of people that it's almost like an ideology that, you know, they feel it's identity, right? I'm an AP teacher. Well, you can be an AP teacher. And if you have the credentials, you can become a college teacher. Or, you know, I'm an international baccalaureate. We like that because we've always done that things that way. That's another question. If one of the answers to when you have asked a question is we've always done things that way, maybe that's a time for an opportunity for innovation.
Well, I think U.S. News and World Report's top high schools in America do a huge disservice because its single metric is AP completion, test completion and scores, which, as you just mentioned, you know, AP is the illusion of a credit. It's not a credit, right? But people want to be on that list so bad for marketing purposes, they will completely abandon a more effective operation. I mean, they have it out there. It's token. They say they have it, but it's just not native to their school processes and enrollment. And their families, they don't know the difference. That's why policymakers should say what is right for the scholar, you know, their economic future, not just what's good marketing or what's the latest fad coming through. So
U.S. News and World Report is not even a news organization. That's how they make their money. They do that report. And, you know, it's sad that, you know, they you know, if they were forward thinking, I think they could add that metric in there and make that possible. You know, it's a measurement.
Since we're on the topic of dual enrollment, I just thought I'd point out one of the benefits I see in getting a little bit ahead in college, even getting your associate degree in high school, not only saving 2 years of, you know, financial, and then Jared was mentioning like starting into the workforce earlier, but a lot of our students just have some breathing room. You know, you don't have to then have your bachelor's in 2 years after you graduate from high school, but, you know, say you studied Spanish or French, go do a semester study abroad and immerse yourself in that, you know, opportunity to really immerse yourself in the language. You know, go do one of our students who was first generation graduate, actually got his associate degree while in high school, went and did volunteer work in Central America. He wanted to Central or South America, I can't remember which one. He wanted to go into medical school, then finished his degree, went to medical school, you know, just getting that patient, you know, experience and doing, not only is he giving to communities, right? He's thinking outside of himself and doing volunteer work. Some serve church missions, you know, there's all these different opportunities to go and just kind of take a break and do some service and maybe practice what you've learned before you just haul through your degree. And so I think that's a huge benefit also because otherwise you feel so much pressure to get out there, finish your bachelor degree, start earning income.
I agree with you 100%. 100%. I mean, there are so many benefits. You know, other benefits are students see themselves as college students. And they have, you know, they get that. It's not like I'm doing something like college, right? No, I am a college student and I have a transcript and I've made this commitment, you know, and it's not just for academics. You know, Jared, I don't know how much, but you know, other parts of the Arizona landscape where they're using career and technical education to move on those pathways. It doesn't have to be just dual enrollment for academics. It can also be dual enrollment in moving into technical fields where a student that doesn't want to do, you know, the traditional college degree, but wants to go through a technical understanding, career and technical education can do that same thing and get those credits. My kids told me to stop saying it, but I said, you know, data science, data science, data science, right? Because there's so many jobs for data science that are out there. And at least one of them, my oldest, is doing chemistry and data science. He'll probably get his internship because of the data science, not because of the chemistry, which is sort of strange. But, you know, that career and technical thing that you don't, you know, normally think of, that is also a pathway because not all students are going to do that, go to the college. But it does, Lindsay, it does give them buffer. It gives them confidence. It gives them the basics that they need, and it helps them propel. I mean, it's literally a catalyst, I think.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, and as you know, the community college category supports both the academic and the vocational side probably better than the other alternatives for higher ed. And the dual enrollment options are in both categories. in the technical space, but also in, and so if we have listeners that are policymakers, like you say, if you were on the governing board or a state policymakers or others, strengthen those partnerships with, specifically with the community colleges and the high schools, because those community colleges are in touch with those trades and their specific benefit to certain young people. And I think you know this, maybe not, Vernon, but we opened up a new charter school on the campus of the East Dalley Institute of Technology. You're supposed to be offended when you're like the fourth person asked to the date, but they had initially asked the district schools to come out and co-locate right on campus. And they were trying to bend the curve with the crisis in Arizona with our youth in the foster system. There's roughly about 20,000, and most of them end up on the streets, trafficked, or dead. It is a major problem,
and no one's
really trying to solve it. When they look at the data, the one thing that seems to bend the curve a little bit, it helps them not end up in those tragic situations, is technical education and preparation, because they have a job and therefore they can get housing and, you know, they can get going. But when you're in a program that's all college ready, which is important for some, but for some of them, it's hard. Anyway, so they asked the districts and the districts were like, no. And they asked a bunch of charters, and most of the charters they asked were just trying to figure out how to monetize it and get the foster money. And they're like, no, you know, so they came to us, and I unpacked what we were doing with Rio Salado and your team. And they're like, wait, what are you doing? I said, oh yeah, Sister Joni had taught us how to do a 4-year plan. And then we did this and we can do that. So the package we present in this school is a high school diploma, college credits. We have every single person eligible to teach it when they're ready. There's a lot of credit recovery going, but there's one or two that are taking a college credit, and then they're getting one or two industry certificates. And so the people that graduate from the school, Paul Revere Academy, are getting all three of those in one high school experience. And we're in our second year, we're getting some data, and we're going to hopefully pilot, test, refine it, and then just share that data with other people in Arizona and the US to say, hey, this is a big issue, not just in Arizona. Here's one way that we're addressing it. I don't expect it to be a silver bullet, but we are seeing higher attendance rates in school. We're seeing their GPAs go up, you know, getting them job placements. We had, at our first graduation, we had 9 graduates. And there were, I think, 3 or 4 of them were youth that were experiencing foster care. And we had, our keynote speaker was someone from a large global construction company, Sut Construction. And he gave a great talk, and he says, I want to meet all of your welders because I have a job for them. And I said, come on over, Clint. We're going to show you all of our welders. And these people are desperate for these type of workers. And you should have seen their eyes, because these youth are bounced around. They just don't feel a lot of love or appreciation from the system. They just want to get out. And when they have an employer that comes and says, hey, what's your name? Can you come over? We'd love to have you on board. They are blown away, because no one's really there. It's always about, how do we pass them along, instead of, how do we get you as part of our family?
Did you hear about Paul Revere Academy? It's literally right on the EVIT campus.
Yeah, they have this half-day thing, morning classes at Paul Revere, and then you spend the rest of the day at EVIT, getting hands-on career training.
Exactly. You can graduate with a high school diploma and a career certificate, like get a head start on a real job before you even finish school.
That's so smart. It's like planning for college and the workforce at the same time.
I'm enrolling. It's perfect if you want to do more than just sit in a classroom all day. Paul Revere Academy in Mesa. Enroll now.
I just love that you're talking not only about outcomes that are there, but our larger purpose in all this is transforming lives. I mean, not a lot of places you can say that we literally transform the lives of individuals, families, and communities, but it's literally a transformation. And no, it's not a silver bullet, as you said, but, you know, oh my goodness, what a story.
Yeah, I'll keep you posted on it. It's fun. We're collecting the data. It's our second year right now, and we have about 40%, which is our target of the total enrollment with the youth in the foster system right now. So it's fun, but that's why it's so important to kind of think outside of that, because most of these other schools that they were hoping, their first choices to the date, they just wanted to talk about the money, or they just wanted to say, no, just send them to our schools. And their schools aren't designed for these. They weren't thinking innovatively, right? And that's one thing I so appreciate about you, because you taught me you got to think outside. And when you do, the world's an oyster. It's a blue sky. You're not competing with anybody because no one's there.
Yeah. And the partnering, I think that's the other part, is finding a good partner. Like you, Sister Joni, you did with Xavier College Prep. Shout out to them, you know. But, you know, the Heritage Academy, Xavier College Prep, you know, these are, you know, you wouldn't normally think of that. But then it's the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, because there's knowledge, there's tacit knowledge that you're sharing. There's you know, it's just, I would have loved to have seen on camera the two of you at that graduation ceremony, you know, looking back and forth at each other and seeing the impact of the good that you've done.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been a pretty picture, because I had just ruptured my Achilles and I had surgery. So I was kind of like in a walker with a big boot on.
Oh, wow.
It was a good moment in education for K-12 education for Arizona and the college. I mean, that nexus. And that's one thing I think is important when we think of like innovation in K-12 and college. We've got to get out, as you did so many years ago and continue to. We got to think outside the box, right? Not literally the classroom box, but how do we benefit society? It's really community development. We're not just pushing graduation rates, although that's what we're accounted for,
right?
Which is fine, but when you look at the bigger picture, is how do we bend the curve on student debt? How do we bend the curve on the foster youth? And what are the resources we have right here in our own, whether it's Arizona or any state? I think most states have what they need if they just start thinking outside their systems and their vested interests, which I think are killing both K-12 and higher ed, is those vested interests. We all know who they are.
Yeah.
The good of these families, and put the combinations together a little bit, and cool things happen.
Terrible things about a society we get in is, I like to call it isomorphism, right? They did that here. We're going to do this here. But it's sort of non-thinking, unintentional. If you're picking up a pattern, if you're doing things the way you're doing it, why? And it's that reflection of stepping back and saying, is this really accomplishing what we want to do? And just because someone else has done it, do we have to follow that same path? You know, boards and principals and, you know, leaders that are here, you know, make that question. I think there's going to be something that comes up. Usually there's someone in your organization that has an answer and has thought about something, a better, more efficient, more effective way of doing things. And, you know, understanding what that is and bringing that out can make a huge difference.
And aren't you excited about what AI is going to do to education at all levels in the future? I mean, you touched on a couple of things.
You know, AI is, you know, emerging technologies. I would look in my lifetime that I've seen are the use of the World Wide Web as a part of the internet, which caused the internet explosion, of course, caused the dot-com boom and everything else like that is there. But the level of impact, and I don't think everyone understands how much AI is going to have an impact. I mean, I'm from the time when there were discussions of whether you should use a calculator in the classroom, right? You know, because, you know, maybe what would happen if you got out and you were on a desert island somewhere and you didn't have a calculator, how would you be able to do that? And it's like, I was in Bolivia. I was doing missionary service in Bolivia and visiting there from Peru. And I went into a black market and picked up a calculator for 500, you know, pesos, which is, you know, nothing. And I said, okay, they never sold me on that argument for that. I think it's the same thing with AI now. AI, you won't be able to get rid of it. It's too useful as a tool, but it's how the strategies that are used to harness it. And I'll say the sweet spot is not in the content creation, because AI in these large language models, right? They go out and they learn it, and then you put your generative pre-trained transformer, your GPT, on there, and you put these things. You can get content. The real question is, how, as a teacher, are you going to use it for assessment? How are you going to do this? And so there's all these concerns about, well, the student didn't write it. Okay, yes, but was it? How was it built into the process? How was AI used in the process? And how are you creating critical thinking, problem solving, oral and written communication, and working in diverse groups in the use of those tools? And it scares a lot of people right now, but it is so transformative. I mean, I try to like look at things in the future, and I see, I don't think it's only been around since 2023 when ChatGPT came out. So we're 2024, almost down to 2024. And the amount of information and tools and other things, it's amazing. And so that's one of the challenges for the future, is what is your intentionality around this? And then how do you ensure integrity and quality for your students? I hear some stories from employers where they go through the process and they get to a point and then they want to test folks and say, well, let's test you on this. And they're not able to do it because they haven't got mastery of what it is. They've been using other things. And that's the other thing. Part of this is, how do you create mastery in the world of AI and for learning, so that you have mastery, so that you can critically think and solve tomorrow's problems? Because they're going to solve a lot of our problems. I'm very happy about it. So Jared, we're not going to, tore out Achilles, right? We're going to have like some medical models that will help us, get better quicker and things like that. But we need folks to be able to think through it and use the tools correctly.
When I had my foot up, I was asking ChatGPT, I'm 5 weeks in, what's the best thing to do? And it was kicking out some info, and it was very interesting. But you bring up an interesting point. There was a really good policy document that was published by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on AI. It's non-sectarian, and they just offered it up as the way that they're going to approach artificial intelligence. And they said, if anybody would like to adopt these guiding principles for their institution, then they just offered it up. And it was very well done. And it wasn't with the posture of, we're worried about it, we're scared about it, right? It was very much a forward AI type thinking and a tech forward posture, where let's look at it this way. And when we do use AI, and we encourage you to, just disclose it and let's talk about, Anyway, so listeners that are listening to this, and we'll link it into the show notes, because I think it is a good first policy. It's probably not perfect. It'll be refined, I'm sure, by the church over the years. But if an institution is trying to get their arms around a policy document, that we'll link that in, and you should take a look at that as a way to form some good policy. Because when I think of how AI is going to impact education, number one, we're going to probably increase the divide of the learners, because I think some learners are just more motivated than others. And those that kind of step into that beautiful blue sky space of self-learning are going to just go on a rocket ship of learning with artificial intelligence and learning models. But if an institution or a policymaker is looking at this, you got to just deconstruct what is education. Education consists of parents and teachers and students, and what surrounds that student to help that student be successful, and how can AI support every step of that? How can they be a coach? How can they be a tutor? How can they be a teacher? Not to replace the important relationships that need, because I'm still a huge advocate of in-person teacher-student relationships. I don't know how you take that part of humanity away without a serious loss, but to augment.
That's sacred. The teacher-student relationship is sacred. I've heard so many technologists, I've heard folks, the creator of MOOCs, right? He made that statement, the teacher-student relationship is sacred.
Huge. But that relationship can be enhanced in powerful ways with, the AI as a teammate, as some people like to say. And absolutely. But bring that out into what kind of a teammate. And yeah. Boy, the world's an oyster.
Yeah, exactly. You know, another document, I'm glad you brought that, the document from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Another document that's out there is from UNESCO. And it's just sort of a guide, sort of an idea of our ethics of artificial intelligence.
Oh, great.
Which is also, so I'm going to actually compare and contrast the two and see, I bet there's some similar, you know, findings. And I think that's great to have these resources because now's the time where we need to be thinking about what is our intentionality, what are our ethics, what are our approaches as we move forward. Because, you know, things hit, the interesting thing about AI is, you know, we talk about the hype cycle, right? You know, you have a hype cycle of things are super hyped, and then they go through the valley of disillusionment. Then actually something comes real out of it. Everything's hyped. I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and everything had AI in it, right? And contains AI, like it's a cereal box, right? Contains AI, right? Now's the time to sort of think, you know, how do we use this? And what is our strategy in implementing this technology? How are we going to use it as a tool rather than be the servant of the tool?
Well, and I won't speak for Lindsay, but I do believe AI is going to be in the future of the American classroom in very important, powerful ways. So I, for one, advocate, learn about it, try it. On my browser, I have 3 different AI tools. And so when I want to get a question answered, I throw it in all 3 and I see what comes out of it.
It's a great brainstorming tool. If nothing else, it's a great brainstorming. I call it like it's like loading up the cognitive domain, right? It just loads that up with so many things and it sparks different things in neural nets that way. It's great for that.
We know AI is out there, right? We're recording this at the end of 2024. How have you seen schools using AI to like create innovation in their programs?
Oh my goodness. You know, I don't know a lot about K-12 sector because I just haven't been looking at it. I just know that I was doing a scholarship read through I'm part of the Rotary Club of Clark County, Virginia, and we give away 3 full scholarships to students. And I was reading the essays, and there are about 25 of them that were students had turned in, and I could tell you exactly which ones were AI generated because I can tell that now. In the future, I don't think we'll be able to tell that. Honestly, I think they're going to be so good that you won't be able to tell that. So part of this is a conversation, I think, and I'm not answering your question exactly, but I think it's a conversation of how it's used and to sort of give the permission for this and say, look, we're not going to do this in the closet. We're not going to do this hide. We're not going to do this in the dark. Look, if you use this, in fact, I'm going to build my assessment and I'm going to build my strategy around this. The first thing I want you to do is I want you to brainstorm your AI, and then I want you to share with me your prompt that you wrote into the AI as the documentation, how you did this. And then part of the question would be, how could you improve your prompt? How could you have improved your prompt to make it more effective? What are you missing, right, in doing this? And that becomes, so this is sort of a different a shift right here. It's not punishing a student for using AI. It's punishing a student for not using it correctly or not using it to its full advantage and not thinking critically as it goes along. Now, and then part of it would be, how do you evaluate this answer compared to other things? What's its fidelity? I mean, AI still has a problem. They call it hallucinations. I'm doing quotes in the air again. It's just frank, you know, fabrication and lies, right? That AI will do. You know, part of that is helping the students understand when things are being fabricated. When is a hallucination? How can you check that? So information literacy and other things are really important. But I'm just saying what I'm seeing is many, many places. It's right now, it's sort of like I use a Maslow's hierarchy. The initial thing, and there's a group, a very good group called WCET. It's the WICHE Cooperative of Educational Technology. They're out of Denver. But they looked at, you know, what are the faculty concerns? What are the student concerns? It's mostly in higher ed. But, you know, the faculty immediately go to integrity. Are you going to write an essay that was written by someone else and you didn't really write it? That's like the big concern. And so, but I'll tell you right now, students are using it. Just like those essays that I read for the scholarship, they're using it. And I think one of the things we have to do is just start becoming more transparent in how we use it. So AI, I could talk about how it's being used for you know, all sorts of monitoring of large data, right? Institutions are using AI to like help track and understand their student population, how to understand using the AI and sort of like the predictive modeling. How can we use an AI model to help us understand who's using the library and who's not using the library and how do we use the data sets around that? And what predictability does that have for students? If we have a student that uses health services in higher education, but you know, it could be other things that are in a K-12, you know, what is the impact of band or athletics on our students? And what could we do to enhance that using this? I mean, for students, my gosh, I would love to be a music teacher right now because I would be using AI to have students start composing and building things. But the part is, how can you get them to understand the process, understand their prompts, understand what they did in that creative process to do that? Sorry, that's a rambling answer, but what would I do? I would play. And I think Jared has the right thing. What should schools be doing right now? They should be playing, but they should not be locking down things. Don't be too quick to say this can happen and this can't happen, because I promise there's a sort of like an arms race, you know? So some folks will say, okay, we're going to use AI. We're going to build an AI detector and it's going to check for these things. And then there's another one that's made that beats that. And it's just like a continuous circle. It's an arms race. It's never ending. And one of the worst things you can have is a false positive when you accuse someone of using AI when they didn't. By the way, I don't trust any AI detector out there. I don't trust them because there's false positives. And, these are just the issues, you know, I'm scratching the surface of what it is.
I think I like how you led with ethics, because that underpins all the disciplines, right? That was a big problem in, you know, the business schools that I come out of, right? Is it was all about the money. And then we got Enron and WorldCom, you know, because the ethical underlying in these business schools was just not there. And now you see this renaissance of ethics and economics being taught together. You also talked about get your brain wrapped around those underlying processes first and the structures, and then use AI to just amplify, magnify, and extend and expand the thinking. And so the human component almost leads to more effective AI use. And the people that'll just use AI lazily are probably going to be, you know, left behind a little bit.
See, Jared, I love just watching you explore that and think through that, because it just shows some of your depth of understanding and your, you know, of understanding and tackling, you know, from, I think, a really complicated issue it's going to affect all of our lives. I mean, it's in everything, in the cars we drive, the phones we use, the clothes we wear. I mean, it's going to affect everything. So I love your thinking around that.
Well, Vernon, this has been a fun conversation. It's fun to catch up. And you're someone that is just fun to follow. And your career is, you got a huge runway. And it'll be fun to see. And if there's anybody listening that wants one of the greatest innovative minds out there, oh, better snatch him up now, because he's going to be off the market really quick.
I'm blushing right here.
You see it on the Chris screen. Told me to say that, but it's true. The Taylor.
Well, right back at you, Jared and Lindsay. Right back at you. I think you're doing great stuff. Every time I hear about the work you're doing, and you know, I listen to the podcast, it's like, that is such a great take on that. Wow. And then it always comes down to, what are we teaching? What are we learning? What are the outcomes? Are we effective or not? And I just really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. And that's what we want to always finish on. The American classroom, the idea is really foggy right now. And I think with discussions like this and how there really needs to be a renaissance in the American classroom, because like we were joking around before, it really is bringing the best of everything that the world has to offer, putting it together for the benefit of our society and the uplift of humanity. I mean, I know it seems like big lofty words and things, but that's what the American ideal has always been. And it's got us start at the kitchen table, but also the classroom. So thank you for being here today. And thank you for sharing your ideas and wisdom. And Any last thing you want to leave us with?
No, thank you, Jared. Thank you, Lindsay. It's been a great conversation. And as your listeners come in and listen to this, I would just say, if you like this, listen to the other episodes in the podcast, because there's some great ideas and some real strong thinking. So I really appreciate inviting me here today. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Smith. And we have, you mentioned EJ Anderson with Rio Salado. We actually have an episode with her that we can link down in the show notes, just specifically on dual enrollment. So we can put that in there.
If you like this episode, please like and share with someone that would find this interesting. We appreciate you listening to the American Classroom Podcast today. Thank you. If you like this episode, please like and share with someone that would find this interesting. We appreciate you listening to the American Classroom Podcast today.
Thank you.